Well, Ashley, welcome to 2019. Holy cow, what a way we're kicking off the year. There's so much going on. There's so many huge changes that are happening across our food system, across healthcare. We see it in retail. And I think in no way is anything more obvious or bringing all of this to light than the current examples with the government shutdown. And I think to take the time to sort of look at this through a lens of how this is impacting all of this, this is not a political issue, this is an American issue, it's impacting all of us in so many ways. And I think this conversation of how is this impacting food safety keeps coming up for both of us. You've obviously had many conversations, I've had a lot of the conversations, so I'm thrilled that we're just gonna take some time today to do a deep dive into that.
Absolutely. And I feel like before we do that, I think our lenses have changed a bit, you know, so I know I started this year with a 2-week-old new company. So the Better Nutrition Program launched, and that's been really exciting for me because really honing in on how can we have better tools to help people make better choices. And, you know, when we talk about food safety and just food access in this conversation, the tools side of things are so important. And I think we get to reimagine or design some of these. I hope we have the opportunity to redesign some of these programs and tools. And I'm so lucky to get to work with experts all over the country, as well as some globally on the development of these tools. A selfish plug, a self-serving plug for the Better Nutrition Program, but that's probably my big news going into 2019. And I know you have some big news too.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that keeps coming up for me and has for the last several years, which is, again, exemplified in what we're seeing with the government shutdown and the lack of funding going into food safety, is that a lot of the companies that we've seen in the food industry, that we've seen come out of the organic industry, they're so careful about sourcing their ingredients, and yet they don't apply that same discipline when sourcing their capital. And so what happens is they end up taking funds from companies that are in a compromised position or may not have the integrity that the organic founding company might have. And so what happens is you take on that toxic capital, and in some cases it can be to the tune of $40 million, sometimes it's $400 million. You take on that toxic capital, and within a couple of years, you quickly realize that you are compromised in your mission and unable to do what you set out to do. And so a huge focus of mine recently has been how can we help entrepreneurs and founders source capital as carefully as they source ingredients? And as you know, I mean, the food industry is hot right now. There's a lot of capital on the sidelines, but a lot of it's uneducated, and that can be incredibly dangerous to our food system and to entrepreneurs. And so I've joined a team, Replant Capital, and our goal is to help fund soil to shelf. And I wasn't going to get involved unless we were also providing solutions to farmers. And thankfully, there are a lot of solutions that we can create because there is something called donor advised funds. It's something very few people are aware of. And it's $110 billion in capital that's sitting on the sideline. And to be able to access that for our farmers so that they can restructure loans, so they can get out from under the debt, so that they have the resources to purchase the seeds that they need is so incredibly important. Because one of the things that we're seeing right now in this shutdown is the fact that farmers can't get access to the loans they need. They can't get access to the data that they need. And all of that ultimately comes down to the dollars that they have access to. So to really solve some of the problems in the food system, I think it really starts with the capital, and it has to be really educated capital that's aligned with our values. So I'm really excited to be joining that team and to really continue to grow the work that you and I have both been doing for the last several years.
So needed. And I know I was texting you over the holidays, often where our best ideas or conversations come from. It's in those moments where we hear things and, like, you know, three or four of our friends from some of our favorite companies are either moving on or acquisitions are occurring. And, I get really nervous what happens, not immediately, but what happens a couple years down. And I think that what kind of money you're taking is so important. And so this morning when I woke up, so I'm actually home, and I woke up next to my mom because I'm helping her as she recovers from surgery. And she said to me, "You know, Ash, are you guys doing that podcast? Because I have something I really would love to hear from you about. And I really think Robin's going to have some interesting points of view too." And she started talking about the shutdown and this whole notion of, is our food safe to eat today? And really, like, straight at it, what tips are, you know, she asked me what I'm recommending for my patients. And he started to talk about, you know, how often I'll have these conversations with you, and you'll be like, Ashley, this is real. Like, what am I feeding my kids? Or we talked about, you know, your daughter at college, who you don't necessarily now have, you know, the ability. She's now dealing with corporate food as opposed to what you might be providing for her. So I'm thrilled. We jumped on the phone and said, let's kick off the year with, unfortunately, this conversation around food safety and the shutdown. But I think it's part of a bigger conversation you and I are really well equipped to have.
Yeah, I totally agree. And so, you know, kind of got to step back and say, let's start with the big picture, because right now there are all these headlines like, oh my gosh, FDA, food safety, you know, panic, 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 panic. And that sells newspapers and that sells magazines. But let's step back and let's start with the big picture. And you got to remember that the United States Department of Agriculture, the USDA, is who is responsible for inspecting the 8,000 slaughterhouses and meat processors in the United States. And right now, those inspectors are working through the shutdown. So USDA handles our meat. And then over on the other side, there's like 80,000 or so food factories that handle everything else, from your favorite broccoli all the way to bread. And the FDA is who oversees them with a very different regulatory philosophy. And something that I learned very, very, very early on in my work that I wrote about in my book, The Unhealthy Truth, is how woefully underfunded the FDA is. And, you know, you look at how the FDA is responsible for overseeing $2.5 trillion worth of consumer products and food and pharmaceuticals. And that budget that they have for that is only about $9 per year per American to try to do this. So what ends up happening is they're actually not able, even in the best of times, even when nothing is shut down, even when they are on their fullest budget, they are not able to examine and inspect the facilities and these processes in a way that you or I or anyone out there might think that they're actually doing. What ends up happening is it's kind of like a once in a 3-year rotation where they happen to come by some of these facilities. And so they'll kind of focus on these high risk areas like unpasteurized juices, soft cheese, raw fish. Those tend to be sort of the focus. And right now during the shutdown, that is very much the focus, these high risk areas. But they're just these huge holes in their ability to inspect at the level that we think they might be inspecting at. And it totally, again, comes down to their budget. And so they're only able to inspect these facilities about once every 3 years. And so what happens is in between, the private market, you know, the companies, Walmart, Kroger, Costco, all these other companies, they have set up these private inspection certifications and agencies, and they come in kind of regularly on an annual basis to conduct these inspections on top of what the FDA is doing. So the private stuff, the certifications, the inspections, that's going on. That's still going on right now. So again, you know, that's when the sort of the free market is able to kind of come in and say, we're going to keep doing these inspections because it's actually in our best interest. But then the Senate can say, well, you know, how valid are those inspections? And is there a way that a company can sort of manipulate these private inspections? So what I think is great about this that's happening right now is it turns a much needed spotlight on the food safety processes that are happening in our country, not just during the shutdown, but during all times.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely echoing that. And, you know, I was really dismayed at a lot of the headlines. And so just the media, I'm calling you out on a lot of this because I think there's a lot of alarm. And also, even if there is reason for alarm, which I'll talk about that in a second, it is totally inappropriate. I'm just so frustrated and tired of these articles that say things like the things that are high risk, meat and produce and dairy. And you're like, hold on a second. Not all of those things across the board. And also shame on us for people who might not have access to all the different kinds of these foods in that part. So what I wanted to start with was actually going through. And first of all, I'm with you. Like, take a dose of magnesium, do some 4-7-8 breathing. There is a lot that is stressful about the shutdown. Our hearts go out to anyone who is actually, you know, furloughed and not being paid. And we're so grateful for those of you who are still working. But the reality is in the current state right now, and obviously this is fluid depending on when you're listening to this, we certainly have a month's worth of time. We likely have longer than that, as you were pointing out, where inspections would not actually be interfered with. It was really interesting to read some of the articles and have the FDA themselves point out that one of our highest risk areas is food that is brought into this country. And it's pretty alarming to hear that piece because, and again, a bit shame on our budget and our government, because that just should not be the case. But that is considered highest risk. And so that's being, that is one of the areas that's being covered. So when somebody asks for my opinion in terms, and it is just that, it is a professional opinion of what you need to be thinking about. First of all, if you are someone who is high risk, whether you're pregnant, whether you're a young child, certainly the younger the child, whether you are an elderly person, whether you have a disease or anything going on that's challenging your immune system, you do need to be more careful about that. You should be working with your practitioner. You should not just take the advice here and be thinking about not just the things Robin mentioned, you know, whether it's soft cheeses or, you know, deli meats or seafood or things like that. But you also want to be thinking about sources of food. But this is not a time to junk food it out, because obviously then we also run into healthcare issues, right? So for the healthy person, what we want to think about is this is a time to take food safety, like the companies have been, and Robin was just talking about, have taken food safety into their own. It's so important for this to be a great refresher for you to take a focus on your food safety. So some of the things we know to be very, very safe, organic frozen fruits and vegetables, great option for you, especially right now, because if you look at the dates, they've also been frozen. They were harvested and frozen long before the government shut down, and they also will last for a long period of time. There's also a financial win there in terms of being able to stock up on that side of things. The other thing that we know in terms of selection is if you are somebody who is choosing meat and you don't have access to, say, organic grass-fed, which may have a healthier halo for a number of different reasons, looking at ground beef is going to be a bit higher risk than looking at something that's not been ground. And this actually brings me over into a conversation I was having about things like avocados and melons, you know, anything that gets chopped up where the knife or the machine is going in and chopping it is going to be a place where that hard skin on the outside is actually, when you chop it, you open and you allow the microbes to come in. So one of the things to think about at home, if you're concerned about food safety, is actually washing the skin of your avocado, washing the skin of your melon, not buying already cut up melon or already cut up avocado and actually, or tomatoes or that kind of thing, and cutting it yourself. Again, actually awesome. This is cost saving for you, because when you pay someone else to do the cutting, you often pay more and your food doesn't last as long. So there are things that we can be doing. I think it's really important. It's always a smart idea to pay attention to when food is being put out. Whether, I know it's the winter, so we don't pay as much attention to this, but if you're somebody who goes to a salad bar, or, you know, if you're at a university or you're at a school, or there's a salad bar at your office, or you're going to a, you know, even the salad bar in the grocery store, you want to be cautious of, especially at this time of the year, people, you know, I know there are those sneeze guards, but people are putting their hands in there. People, you know, there's a lot of stuff on that part. And so maybe this is that opportunity where, again, you purchase the vegetables, you take it home and you prepare it yourself. That also is cost saving. So there are things that you can and should be doing in this. But actually, Robin, as we started to look at food safety, I think, you know, this larger conversation of policies of certainly of this administration, I think what you're talking about with the FDA long even predates this administration. But there are some policies in this administration that are challenging just overall. But I think one of the things, and you touched on this, and I'd love to dive in further. It's so important for us to understand that companies, you know, especially you mentioned Costco, Kroger, et cetera, these companies and the food companies, the supplement companies that, and I like to highlight organic in this space because it is also representing companies that are, when they're purchasing organic ingredients, they're making a decision about food safety as well as quality of ingredient, that they're doing a lot of work already and on their own because they are keenly aware that the government program has not been sufficient. So I do think that that's key.
Yeah, you know, and as I listen to you, I think about the rules that I adhered to during my pregnancies. And in a way, it's a lot of the same application here. I mean, when you're pregnant, you're avoiding soft cheeses, you're avoiding, you know, fish, you're avoiding all these different things, you're avoiding tuna. I mean, you know, there's just so many different things that you just sort of, you go into this uber safe mode when you're pregnant. And I would invite moms that are listening to do that. I mean, really, in a lot of ways, it's the same high-risk foods that you're told to avoid when you're pregnant are the same high-risk foods that are presenting the biggest cause for concern right now. But again, I mean, I think you got to step back and you got to say, look, this is a perfect opportunity to examine a system that is less than perfect. And there are a lot of opportunities to bring transparency into the food system so that if the government shuts down, we're not as vulnerable as so many people feel right now. And I think one of the ways that we're starting to see that is through technology. And there are so many handheld devices, so many scanners that are coming on the market, testing for everything from glyphosate to food allergens. And by putting the power back into the hands of the consumer, again, that forces the industry to be more transparent, to get with a program, to make sure that they're conducting their inspections. And, you know, the cynic would say, gosh, they have every reason to fudge this. Not necessarily. I mean, the liability around the lawsuits, around these recalls is massive. So they really have an incentive as a business to try to get it right. Because when they get it wrong, it is so incredibly expensive. So on the one hand, you know, we have consumers with kind of these handheld devices that hopefully over the next decade or so, we're going to be able to detect everything from different bacteria to allergens to pesticides. But then on the other hand, the other thing that's changing rapidly right now in the food industry is the introduction of blockchain technology. And with that, there's just this open source ledger. There's just this ability for anyone anywhere to go in and access the data in the way that the food is produced. And I think by bringing, again, that kind of accountability and that kind of transparency, it's not government regulated, you know, it's just creating this system of transparency around the data. It's going to allow for a lot of these companies to detect when something has gone wrong a lot faster. It allows them access to the data a lot faster. And, you know, Walmart, surprisingly, is the company that has been the quickest to try to figure out how can we execute and build these systems. And, you know, the cynics are going to say, oh my God, it's Walmart. But, you know, the flip side of that is they are managing so much of our nation's food supply. Something like 17% of all SNAP dollars are spent through a Walmart. So, you know, like they are a huge source for everything that's going through our food system from organic to conventional. And for them to try to wrap their heads around that data and make sure that everything's safe, they know they couldn't rely on the government. They know that wasn't a complete enough system. And it's only part of the process. So they have actually built out these other systems, and they're one of the first to really kind of embrace blockchain. And I think it makes sense because of the scales. It's just, they're managing so much information. There are so many food suppliers. There's so many farmers. But the only way that they can do that is with technology and building into these different systems. And what I think is very interesting that relates to this right now is the new deputy commissioner of the FDA has just come from Walmart. And he is somebody I've actually known for a very, very, very long time. He was involved in the food allergy world 12 years ago when I first got involved. I think he was working for someone totally different at the time. But with a child with food allergies, he has always come to food safety with that very sincere commitment of a father. And he was inside of Walmart when they were building out kind of the blockchain programs and everything else there. And so I think, you know, again, in any crisis, there is a huge opportunity. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing right now is that opportunity for better business practices and better modeling and the opportunity for companies to figure out how can we embrace this. To me, always err on the side of transparency. The more transparent you can be with yourselves, with your employees, with each other, you know, in the long term, that's the best bet.
Yeah, I think that's so key. And I think that also, and it's something we've talked about often, is this is also this time. This is one of the reasons we need to be reimagining, whether it's on the investment side or the food side, you know, the size and the scope of our food. And a big part of that is certain farming practices create a higher risk than others do in terms of food safety. I think that is a really important thing for us to pay attention to. And so the absent, you know, we have had foodborne illness with food safety inspectors. So some of the communication may be a greater issue, but I also think this is a really interesting time for public-private partnerships, especially at the state level, where businesses that are operating at the state level should be talking with their government with the state government and having, you know, an investment there in what is going to happen at the state level And I also think right now we need to be hearing from these companies. You know, there is a parallel path, a very intense path on, you know, how companies look at food companies, look at the development and the processing and all of the, you know, from the harvesting all the way through to the distribution of their products. So, you know, there is a tremendous amount of opportunities. We look forward to hearing from more of them. I think something else that came up as I was reading, and again, I mean, the headlines around this, the clickbait is just so bad in terms of, you know, making you feel that literally no food is going to be safe. So we just need to, you know, to reinforce we are no less safe food-wise today. But it is interesting when you look at FDA, what their oversight, we're also talking about tobacco, we're also talking about drug regulation, drug oversight. And so I think that's also really important to look at, you know, what that means, especially with a sustained shutdown. So the temporary nature of the shutdown is not something that creates a tremendous amount of alarm and should not create that, in my opinion, from a food safety standpoint. But a shutdown of any greater duration really does create jeopardy in terms of, you know, some of the things that the FDA is responsible for, especially on the drug side of things, whether it's testing of products and also answering and being able to review submissions where there are instances where either consumers or retailers, where there have been violations that people are writing in about or concerns. And if those things aren't getting reviewed, then that is going to create a less safe environment for us.
I know. And I mean, again, to get back to this key point that the FDA is required to only inspect these facilities once every 3 years. And then anytime, any year, regardless if there's a shutdown or not, those inspections are not happening between Christmas and New Year's. And I'm with you. I mean, the clickbait is not what we need right now. We do not need sensational headlines and we do not need people freaking out unnecessarily. You know, I think the fact that this has brought a much needed attention to the shortcomings in the FDA inspection system is really critically important. And what I love about that is that the market can usually meet that demand. Policy is super slow in this crazy politically charged era that we live on, you know, live in. The political parties aren't going to agree on pretty much anything. So to try to hold our breath and hope that they're going to come to their senses together, you know, on safety and food safety and inspection. I mean, I've been at this for too long to think that's going to happen. But what I have seen happen is the market response, and whether it's a handheld device, whether it's consulting agencies, there are former FDA commissioners and people that have worked inside that now run consulting agencies. And I think, you know, that's the kind of stuff to see the market respond to these demands is what is so exciting and where there are opportunities. And I think, you know, what so many of us have realized is that we kind of have this monoculture here of genetically engineered corn and soy, and that in and of itself has introduced so much risk because there's not this kind of soil vitality and diversity that we know is needed to grow and create healthy foods. And so, you know, with this, I think it's kicking off a much bigger conversation. It's really timely that it's happening at the beginning of the year. I'm with you. I worry that people are going to be like, oh, you know, screw it. I can't do my New Year's resolution because I'm not supposed to eat leafy greens, or maybe they're at risk. And I think that is the danger. But to really step back and say, how can we build a smarter food system in this private-public partnership? What can we be doing and what can we be thinking about so that when this happens again, because it will, that we don't feel quite as vulnerable?
Yeah. And I feel like I'm like you. I love to look for the silver lining, even if it's one that makes us a little bit uncomfortable. And for me, the silver lining is it should be putting a heck of a lot more attention on instead of one's drama New Year's resolution to lose weight. My goal is always in January for people to tune up their digestive systems and really focus on prebiotics and probiotics. And I was just in a conversation with a couple of scientists and historians about, you know, what we ate, not prehistoric thinking paleo, but really looking at prebiotics and, you know, what our food supply was looking like and the role that our prebiotics, not just of feeding probiotics, the good bacteria, but the role of these prebiotics in actually helping to create a healthier mucosal layer, which was what runs throughout your digestive tract, and its ability to, for when you have a healthy mucosal layer, it's able to vet pathogens or toxins much more easily and also to formulate a better response. And so, you know, the conversation here should be especially if one is concerned about food safety. One of the things that we know, again, I'm talking about somebody who's healthy. I don't want anyone to think that they're, and we also know that a healthy adult who is exposed to a foodborne illness can end up in the hospital. I mean, I don't want to diminish any of these issues, but I do know that the healthier that our digestive systems are, just like the healthier that our soil is, that microbiome and the microbiome of the soil, those are integrally linked. And I also think it sheds a light on, look at the investment that we have to make in this country for, when you talk about how many different slaughterhouses we have and those large scale, the CAFOs, the really big size slaughterhouses, in terms of being able to manage that food safety, we would have again, as we shift to what I hope is a healthier food supply with smaller slaughterhouses and less meat consumption per person, that we actually will see natural food safety occurring because of the way that animals are treated and also health, in the individual. So I think that there is, there's a lot of this that, again, the shutdown is extremely upsetting. And I actually want to, in focusing on that, I want to shift again to the policies of this administration, because when I did my training at County Hospital in Los Angeles, we basically saw no one with any healthcare, no insurance. And then I went out into the communities, many of which were farming communities, to do community nutrition. And even at that time, absent the immigration policy, the current immigration policies, and I don't even want to talk about the policies as much as the climate of fear, we had a really hard time with bringing people into the hospital before it was really a very emergency situation. And that's when you don't have insurance, when everyone doesn't have access to insurance, and certainly when you fear that going to a hospital could result in your deportation or a family member being exposed for being here, any of these pieces. And that is actually a massive risk to our food supply because, as we know, so many persons who are working in the harvesting and the in different aspects of our food right now are people who feel that concern or feel that fear in this current environment. So that's one area. I also look at the shutdown and its impact on our the ability of postal distribution and, of our postal service and then also of our transportation. So when we talk about, not just TSA agents, but we also look at money being, inspecting and also who's managing just safety at our ports and things like that. There are other aspects that have played a major role in our food safety that are outside of this FDA conversation, just the FDA inspector conversation.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I think, for too long, we've been overdue. And again, this goes back and forth between multiple presidencies across both political parties to really sit down and have a conversation about our budget. And I think that has to happen because when you have a country in the kind of health crisis that we are in, where safe and clean, organic foods without a ton of pesticides apply to them, when that is not affordable and accessible to everyone, we are throwing our country into a health crisis. And already we're seeing that with the healthcare system that is so burdened by the rates of cancer, by the rates of diabetes, by the rates of Alzheimer's, by the rates of food allergies, by the rates of asthma. And again, it's like, there is a fundamental truth to the fact that our healthcare begins with what we put on our plate. And yet we haven't built a system that can afford that opportunity to all Americans. And to me, that is such an injustice and it creates so many problems. Mm-hmm. And so to step back and say, again, here's the FDA, it's totally underfunded. It's unable to do all of the inspections that Americans would hope they were doing, even on a fully funded best day. Mm-hmm. And so to step back and say, if we had the chance to sit down as a country and reassess what our budget looks like, would we change things? And unfortunately, I think we're in such a politically charged time that it's almost incredibly difficult to have that kind of a conversation. But fundamentally, I think that's what needs to happen.
Absolutely. So I want to promise everyone, this is in a takeout. We try not to be Debbie Downers, and we definitely don't want 2019 to feel Like we're kicking it off with just a UGG. And actually, you know, Robin, one of my favorite things to do is to follow so much of you're so great at aggregating on social media, the stories. So one of my favorite stories I saw you posting about was, I think it was beer cans, where instead of having the plastic around the six pack, they're actually, there's a company that had developed something that now feeds the turtle. Do you recall what I'm talking about?
Oh, I mean, totally. I think too, for all of us, I mean, from the very beginning of my work, I had to figure out a way to present it that gave people hope.
Yeah.
And the stories can be really dire. And it's like, oh no, I'm going to jump out the window. I don't want to hear any more from these people, you know, and that doesn't motivate, that doesn't galvanize, and that doesn't solve anything. And so, yeah, you need to drop these nuggets that are pretty heavy and hard to hear. But at the same time, you know, with every challenge is a massive opportunity. And there are these, for example, three young guys out of Richmond that have just started this company to create an alternative that's, you know, environmentally friendly to styrofoam. And so, you know, what we're realizing is that it is in our hands. And what's beautiful about the market is that entrepreneurs are able to develop these solutions. We don't have to wait for policy to be entrepreneurial. And so that would be my advice. Don't wait for policy to be entrepreneurial. If you have a good idea, let us know.
Yeah.
There are a lot of different buckets and places that people can pull from. One of the challenges right now for a lot of women is that only 2% of venture capital money goes to women. One of the challenges for a lot of Black people is only 2% of venture capital money goes to African Americans. I mean, that is shockingly terrible. And so to step back and say, that's a huge opportunity. Let's figure out how that we can get more money into more diverse hands to create more diverse solutions so that we can tackle some of these problems. And to me, that's where I just get totally fired up.
Totally. And so it'll be a year of very diverse conversations. So whether it's diversity in the soil, diversity in the where the money is, diversity in, I would argue, you know, one of the best things that you can do from a safety standpoint is also one of the best things you can do from a health standpoint. And that is have diversity in what you consume. I also, you know, big shout out, as I said, for frozen organic. I also were thrilled, you know, it's the eve of Fancy Foods, you know, big food show in San Francisco. And there are all sorts of plant-based options. So instead of having the tuna, you could have the plant-based tuna, you know, so there are all sorts of, and you could make it at home. So there are all sorts of different things to feel really great about. And my final piece is just a, for those of you that are of means and are able, first of all, you know, it's been one of my greatest pleasures of recent to be spending time at a food pantry. And one of the places that this is really hitting people the hardest is actually access to good quality, not just safe, but good quality food. So if you are able to donate, that is amazing. And second of all, as Robin said, if you are even able to be more involved, look to support companies that have a diversity of opinions as well as a diversity of individuals. So we're thrilled to kick off 2019. Robin, I thought I would ask you, I would take a twist on our favorite question instead of, you know, if you were a food, what would you be and why? So I thought I would ask you if you are right now in the shutdown, what are you eating and why?
Holy smokes, we are pounding multivitamins over here right now because the flu is everywhere. We had my whole family out here and I mean, people were just falling left and right. They'd come out from Texas. So I'm looking at my kitchen counter right now and it is just loaded with all the mega food gummies and the multivitamins and the edelberries, all these things. So I think keep it simple, like you said. Stay healthy. You know, we stay away from dairy because it doesn't do well by our family. And I think to kind of eat a diet that's less inflammatory during these times of challenges, whether it's flu season or government shutdown, you know, just to be mindful of eating things that you know are kind to your body. And I think that's a little bit different for all of us.
I love that. And I'm really lucky to not have to make it too many changes for myself or for my dog because our staple is organic frozen broccoli. And so right now, all signs point to that's safe. We're good having that one. And another one that I'm just a huge fan of are hemp seeds. You know, again, from a food safety standpoint, I think your advice is just fantastic. Keep it simple. And that's going to be a way to keep yourself safe and also support your body's running better, whether it's whether the government's running or not. We want to help the body run better. So thanks, everyone.
Awesome. Thanks, Ashley.